Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
We're gonna get weird? All right.
Let's get weird. Let's huff this marker, and then we're also gonna sniff model glue. I got some model glue in my bag.
Oh, nice.
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah, recorded live in the Jeanette D. Moses Memorial Studio. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, arts, action sports, and subculture. On today's episode, Atmosphere, Love Dance More, and the SLC Photo Collective. Atmosphere formed in 1989, with the group's first big exposure coming from their debut album, Overcast, released in 1997. The duo has since collaborated with artists like Evidence, Aesop Rock, Odd Jobs, Dos One, Blueprints, and Brother Ali. And in April of last year, the duo released their seventh full-length album, The Family Sign, which debuted at number 13 on Billboard. Slug writer Kia McGinnis interviewed Atmosphere's MC Slug recently while the duo was on tour. You want no placement within this mess I'm making. I'm painfully aware of my mistakes, and maybe you should break and escape from the situation, or take a little taste of the blame, then instead you full of hate.
It's been a little over a year since your last album, and I'm wondering what the motivation behind this tour is.
Just to kind of finish off the cycle of that album, I guess, you know, and go to the remaining cities that we didn't get to go to yet, as well as a couple of the major markets that sold out fast last time, you know, kind of going back to some of those to try and give some people an opportunity to come that didn't get to come.
Do you have a favorite song to play live, or are there any that you dislike playing?
Oh, yeah, but, you know, the list changes, you know. Yeah. What I mean? It's like sometimes I don't want to play God Loves Ugly anymore, so we'll take a break from it. Or Modern Man's Hustle, so we'll take a break from it, and then I'll miss it, and then I'll be like, oh my god, we gotta play it, you know, this is, you know, the relationships that I have with these songs are never set in stone, they will evolve and change just like my, you know, just like I evolve and change.
Well, I would say that your music appeals to a huge audience, like more people dig you than normally dig hip-hop. Do you have any idea about why that is?
Well, for starters, I disagree with the statement. For instance, tons of people dig Kanye West, way more than even dig us. And so I don't think that we're necessarily bigger than hip-hop or a hip-hop audience. I think what it is that we have somehow established ourselves as, I guess, the kind of group that does attract people who are like, I don't even really like rap, but I like Atmosphere.
Right.
And I think that comes from the approach that we take to making the music. You know, Anthony approaches making music, I can't really speak for him, so I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I'll tell you what my opinion of what he does is. I feel like he approaches music as a way of creating moods and soundscapes more so than trying to create a hit. And then lyrically, I approach it from just, I don't know, I don't want to sound pretentious, but an honest place within myself. I talk about stuff that I think about, you know, and I think that what happens is it does attract people who think about the same kind of shit or who have the same kind of mood that Anthony does, you know.
Right.
So therefore our music, when you play it next to like a song by like Redman, you know, his song will sound huge and big and all empowering, and ours will sound a little bit more lo-fi, you know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of taste. Then after that, it's like, well, what kind of sound do you want? You know, if you want something more lo-fi, you may be more interested in checking out an Atmosphere or an Aesop Rock, or, you know, if you want something really big and bombastic, then you should probably, you know, go listen to Lil Wayne.
Cool. Well, do you feel that your writing process with Ant comes naturally and easily, or is it sometimes a more difficult process?
It's both, you know. It has its ups and downs, like anything. You know, sometimes he'll give me a track that will just be obvious, like, oh, that song totally has to be about, you know, this, whereas sometimes he'll give me tracks that are a little bit more ambiguous and a little bit more open to interpret. Anything, just keep it up. I'll be right here, cause she's enough. She wanna do the damn thing, and I'm on her side. She opened up the wings, and she gonna fly. She got no time for the fuss and fight. She does it right. She loves her life. She the one that put the kick in the drums. She the hot stovetop when the winter comes. She hits the run. She can lift a ton. She gonna stick to the job and get it
out and push if the motor's dead. She gotta keep it moving with no regret. She's up in my head, but never overstep.
Something I respect about your music is that you seem to write positively about women versus some other things that I've heard in hip-hop. Is there a significant woman in your life or significant women in your life that have influenced you as a writer?
Sure, you know, I mean, my wife, my mom, you know, everybody, you know what I mean? Like, I'm influenced by everybody in my life, the women and the men. And I would hate for you to give people the wrong impression that I'm some sort of great feminist angel of hip-hop, because, you know, there's plenty of things scattered in my in my writing that are not so flattering of women as well. You know, it's just that I've always tried to do a good job of not necessarily running anybody through the mud except for myself.
Right.
And so I've got music where a woman might play a negative character in the song because, you know, that the song is more about me and how that affected me than it is about that particular woman. You know, I try not to use the word bitch or, you know, any of the standard misogynistic cliche approaches to when I'm to making my music, because I know that in real life it's not that cut and dry, you know. But in the same breath, it's not so cut and dry that I can be considered like a feminist either. Like, I think that I'm human, so therefore I'm just as contradictory as anybody and just as complex as anybody, in the sense that, you know, there's duplicity, there's both sides, there's an angel on my shoulder and a devil on my shoulder. And, you know, truthfully, when it comes down to it, my past is just as speckled as anybody's, with, you know, sexual exploits and just random poor decision making on my part as well. But at the end of the day, I think my mom raised a kid who cares and who wants to be a positive difference, you know, even if sometimes I have to show a negative side of myself in order to try to ascertain that positivity.
Right. I think your realness definitely bleeds through your songs, and that's something that your listeners appreciate. Is the Lucy that you refer to in several of your songs a certain person, or is that like a metaphor for something?
I mean, it's all over the place. It's mostly a metaphor, but if I had to ever say, you know, that Lucy is a person, I would probably say Lucy is me, truthfully, because I feel like Lucy represents the type of codependency issues that I've had. On people, codependency on booze, codependency on drama, music, whatever. I think Lucy has always represented things that have played powerful, negative roles in my life. But in the same breath, those are things that I grabbed onto and held closely to my life because of my addiction to those things, you know? And so, truthfully, Lucy is probably just me, you know what I mean? But rather than just straight up going, here's my problem and I suck, I will tell a story to exemplify that issue. You know what I mean? To try and get the point across.
Bad, cause I said we can't go to the zoo. It's not a lie, but daddy's too high. If I drive, I will probably catch a DUI. Here, play with this pitcher of beer. Sit in these chairs and don't disappear. Everybody on your best behavior. Tip the waitress, respect your neighbors. I'll be watching, you know what not to do. Don't make me walk over here just to talk to you. I gave them all some money so they...
You were co-founder of Rhymesayers Entertainment. Well, that seems to be kind of a go-to for lovers of independent hip-hop. I'm wondering what your label's up to lately.
Well, shit, this year was a big year for us. We put out a lot of records this year, and we still got a few more coming out this year. Like, earlier in the year, we put out an Evidence record, late last year, I should say. But we put out an I Self Divine record this year, an Aesop Rock record. We have a Brother Ali record coming out in September, and a record from POS coming in November. And just, you know, we stay busy just putting out records and trying to continue to develop, you know, the label, as well as help some of these friends of ours, these artists, you know, reach their goals.
Would you have advice to give to any up-and-coming hip-hop artist of today?
Sure. Don't lie to anybody. Don't lie to yourself. Don't lie to your audience. Don't lie to your friends. Don't lie to your girlfriend. Don't lie to the people that you're trying to get to do distribution for you. Just don't lie to anybody. Like, it's a hustle, but if you gotta lie to get something from somebody, then you're not really getting it. You're just borrowing it, because they're going to take it back once the lie falls through.
I like that. That's awesome advice. What's next for you? Do you have any new music in the works? Anything you're going to pull out of your sleeve?
I mean, I always have stuff in the works, but nothing that I am prepared to discuss yet, you know what I mean, until I
right.
get a better idea of what's going on. But I tend to stay busy. I don't stop, because I don't want to get fired. I love my job.
From their latest album, here's Atmosphere with My Key.
Your name on the stone wall. We made some babies, we made some messes too. Trying to do our best to push all of the blessings through. Half life gets spent behind a wheel, trying to claim innocent while I assemble my appeal. The blood and bones are pure as the tears. You can skip a stone and hit a full jury of my peers. But don't judge yet, just let the love get you wound up enough to beat the sound off the drum set. And point your voice at the void. Rejoice, make noise like you had the choice. It goes overflow, how much more can you hold? And still put faith first at the fork in the road. Search for the universal remote control while the words spill out of the hole in your soul. Now close your eyes and crack a smile if you know me, while I spit into the sky, cause I missed the little homie. Disturb my peaceful smirk. Take everything that I bring with me. Make who I be now. Hear my family now.
From Atmosphere's last album, The Family Sign, that was My Key. Atmosphere will be coming through the city on September 19th at In The Venue with special guests Iself Divine and Carnage. For more info on the band, visit them online at rhymesayers.com/atmosphere. Ashley Anderson created the website Love Dance More in 2010 as an open forum for events and happenings in the dance community, while also promoting her own productions at the Masonic Temple. One of the company's biggest shows is Mudson, a free work-in-progress series to showcase the works of Salt Lake City's emerging and experienced choreographers and dancers. Slug writer Isha B sat down with the LDM dancer Sam Hansen and talked about the show.
What styles of dance do you usually work in? What's your aesthetic when it comes to creating and performing dance?
Well, I started out in modern dance, and you know, a lot of people start out in like ballet or jazz or in hip-hop or other sort of vernacular forms, but I started out doing modern dance, and I guess you could call what I do postmodern dance or contemporary dance, although I think both of those terms have their sort of weaknesses, and one of the problems dance has is that it's always struggling for the right language, but I very much fit into that genre, I guess I would say.
Modern dance?
Mm-hmm.
Right on. Well, that's kind of nice too, because it's a little bit broad, right? It's open to interpretation, which is nice. Other than Love Dance More events, what other performances and events have you been part of?
I just did a show at Knox Contemporary, which is a newish gallery over on 4th West by the homeless shelter. I've done a lot of video work in the last few years. I did a piece for an online series called Dances Made to Order, based out of Los Angeles.
Very cool.
Little things here and there.
Tell us about your involvement in the local dance community, and especially your involvement with Love Dance More.
Well, Ashley and I moved back to Salt Lake around the same time, and Ashley is the director of Love Dance More, which is a branch of her nonprofit, Ashley Anderson Dances, which just basically presents her work. And we moved back around the same time and found ourselves struggling, this was in 2009, struggling with a lot of the same sort of questions and ideas and problems with living in Salt Lake. And a lot of them were just sort of around the fact that, you know, there's a lot of dance education here, which is really great, but there's not a lot of sort of opportunities for emerging and sort of mid-career artists. And there's also not a lot of critical dialogue about dance in the city. So we worked on starting Mudson, which was her brainchild, which is based on the Judson Church performance series that happens in New York. It's been going since the late 70s, early 80s consistently. It started in the 60s, but I think it sort of intermittent.
That's really neat. Is Mudson her brainchild then, technically? Like, there's no other Mudson in the world. It's based on the Judson, did you say?
Yeah, it's a play on words.
That's so cool.
The Judson series, which is administrated by Movement Research, happens nearly every week, and it's always on a Monday night, and it's always free. And ours is a little bit more intermittent. It's every month. But it's the third Monday of every month. And the Masonic Temple is a great space. It's totally
an amazing
bizarre,
venue.
But
that's so cool. Involved with Mudson since its inception then, since the very beginning?
Yes, I performed at nearly every Mudson. I think I've missed maybe like two or three.
That's neat. What other roles do you play in Love Dance More?
I just help Ashley out where I can because I think the work she does is very important. Lately I've been helping specifically with sort of new media projects. We just did a show that Ashley and I curated together called Screen Deep, which was an assortment of video projects and films that either dealt with dance directly or sort of dealt with choreographic thinking. There were pieces made by choreographers that contained no live bodies. There were pieces made by filmmakers that contained restaged dances. So a real diversity of thought on how to sort of like take dance out of the context of the stage and recontextualize it using film and video.
That sounds way cool. So that's something that people can check out?
Well, we're going to try to do more of those. We have a ton of films and videos that artists here and across the country and even some international artists have given us the permission to use, and so we're always looking for places to show them. Our next showing is actually going to be a gallery installation at the Rio Grande building downtown. I think it's starting in January and going through March. So.
Right on. We'll look forward to that. Tell us about your the recent showing of your Dances Made to Order video piece.
Dances Made to Order is kind of a cool thing. It's founded by this woman named Kingsley Irons in Los Angeles, and she has like this monthly subscription series, so you can pay, and this year she decided to feature all these cities across the country. So local curators will curate three artists to make a film from each city, and so in March I did one, Aniko Safran did one, Josie and Scott Halford from Ogden made a film. I'm showing mine again in various local venues. The Salt Lake Library and the Fear No Film Festival has shown it, so it's gotten some good play in Salt Lake.
Yeah, that sounds like awesome play. Yeah. Congratulations. What's it like to prepare for and participate in Mudson?
Well, it's always different. I mean, I've danced, I've choreographed, I've made kind of like a film installation for one artist that asked me to help her make a film. So it's it's different for every process. The processes that I tend to be attracted to, both as a maker and a performer, tend to be sort of really diverse, but like a little bit eclectic and focusing more on, or as much on like sort of the discomfort with our bodies as any kind of virtuoso or technical prowess that we might have. So we do all kinds of crazy things to make dances that people don't see, but hopefully have some kind of efficacy in the world.
The appeal to you as a choreographer and dancer to make work for a Works in Progress series?
I think, and you know, Ashley has articulated this to me, and this was something we shared early on when she was conceptualizing this series, that if you don't make work consistently for a while, like a good while, it doesn't get better. It just helps to show things frequently and to have lots of. In a lot of ways, I think it's better to have lots of little opportunities than like two or three big opportunities.
Totally agree. That's because that's where you would build up your skills so that then when those big opportunities come up,
right,
you're ready, right?
Exactly.
That's neat.
Yeah, and you know, you get to see people take risks that they might not otherwise take, I think, which is
very cool.
Lovely.
So, and I think you clarified this, but just to be really clear, your choreographing material, you will be performing as well.
Yes, I'm doing a duet with my friend Kitty Saylor, and we're gonna dance it as well as make it.
We have
been working on it for the last month or two.
And without giving too much away, what can we expect to see from you and other choreographers' pieces?
Our piece has been really wild, and it's, at this point, totally improvised. So we have sort of like scores, which is a term dancers used to talk about, like structures that we know are sort of like rules that we follow, but we don't have at the moment any set choreography that we're planning to perform, although that could definitely change. We do a lot of sort of like talking while dancing in this piece, and just like a lot of kind of like play on stage to try to figure out why we're still doing this with each other and like what this milieu of dancing together means to us.
So you've been working on this piece for a while, but it's the first time that you'll be performing it?
And Kitty and I have sort of, you know, because Kitty is she just graduated from the university in the graduate program, and she started right after I left the university, so I don't know that we would have really ever gotten close enough to each other personally or artistically to make anything together if it hadn't been for Mudson, so.
That's neat, too. So you found each other.
Yeah, we found each other through the power of dance.
Do you have any other performances or any other types of showings coming up?
Well, Kitty and I are putting together a show in December. We're not quite clear on the date yet, though. But keep your eyes out for that. I'm sure Ashley will graciously post a little article about that on the blog for us.
Gotcha. So be a love dance mom. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on that.
Fall's first Mudson is September 17th at the Masonic Temple, located at 650 East South Temple in downtown Salt Lake City. More information on the company and the productions can be found online at lovedancemore.org. We're joined today for one of my favorite segments in the show. It's when we get to talk to a Slug staffer about upcoming events in the week. We call it the Weekly Daily Calendar Rundown. Well, I call it the Weekly Daily Calendar Rundown. And I'm joined today by junior editor Alexander Ortega. Thank you, Alex, for joining me.
Yeah, you got it.
We're going to talk about really fun stuff the week of 9/11 to 9/17. Aside from the memorials that people are going to go to on September 11th, there's also a farmer's market.
Right, there is a farmer's market that's happening on Tuesday. It's held every evening up until October. And it's a good opportunity for people like me who don't necessarily like to be up, you know, early on Saturdays.
When the markets are usually held.
Right, and so it's a good time for people who are awake more in the, you know, post-afternoon hour.
People that aren't in metal bands like you is what you're saying? Regular
right.
People?
Right. I guess I'm not really in the... You could call it dance metal.
Let's call it dance metal.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's going on later on in the week? I'm sure you've got something exciting up your sleeve.
Well, of course, every month, as it is wont to occur through Slug planning, we have our monthly Localize, which happens Friday, September 14th. This month is going to feature Cornered by Zombies, whose equation I would make the Black Dahlia Murder plus Metallica minus vocals minus bass plus better instrumentation, because seriously, they kick ass. And then another recent favorite of mine, Settle Down, whom I would describe as Torch plus Form of Rocket. And
don't you mean Torche?
Is it?
No.
What?
I'm fucking with you.
Why are you doing that? Why do you gotta be that way?
Sorry, man. Because it's spelled all funny.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, nobody's gonna call their band Torche.
Badasses.
And then there's Gunner, who's a local hardcore outfit, whom I would describe as Botch plus Defeater. That's at Urban Lounge, starts at 10 o'clock that night. It's just $5, 21 plus. And it's gonna be hootin' and hollerin' good time, because that's what metal usually is hootin' and hollerin', from my experience.
Yes.
Not really.
No, there's some hooting and hollering, but that's not the main focus of the music. It's also presented by Napalm Flesh, which is our metal section, you can find on Slug. Actually, if you consider Slug Mag to be a segment, you know, a segmented beast like Voltron, let's say the Napalm Flesh is the fist.
Okay.
Do you know what the Voltron is?
I'm more of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers era, so I could relate it to Megazord.
Exactly.
Where, the Tyrannosaurus Rex was the head segment, or upper abdomen segment.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, the Mastodon segment was the arms.
What's the Megazord? Is it the sword? What are you saying?
No, Megazord. The Zord was like their robots. And then, but he, of course, he did have a mega sword.
Okay, that's what I thought. Which
somehow, like, flew from the sky into his hands whenever he wielded it.
I do remember that. That was fucking epic.
It turns out,
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is really epic metal type stuff.
Yeah, it is. Have you listened to the intro to their theme song?
No.
It's Buckethead plays it, and it's
really
pretty wailing. I would suggest looking it up on YouTube.
You're being serious. I want everyone to know it's a real thing. Just for the intro alone, it's badass. It's like Voltron with live action if you've never seen Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and you know what the hell Voltron is. We're doing events. We're in the middle of events right now, Alex.
Anyway, then on Sunday, September 16th, happy Mexican Independence Day.
Can you say something in Spanish, please, about that?
Viva Mexico, or Viva el Grito de Dolores.
Fuck yeah, man.
My Spanish isn't very good, but
it's okay. I remember last Localize, we were trying to speak Spanish at each other, and I did not do a good job of it.
Well, it wasn't happening.
I couldn't hear, and I'm like, I think he's speaking Spanish. That's my dumb white guy voice. I think he's speaking Spanish at me, but I have no idea entirely what he's saying.
I don't know. I think the whole identity of being a white person is shifting. It's more like, oh man, gluten-free. I think that's what white is now.
White culture now is white avoidance of glutens.
Yeah.
Glutens and its participles, whatever. Gluten is a thing.
It's derivatives.
Derivatives, thank you. Participles is an English term.
Right. And so, well, anyway, you can celebrate Mexican Independence Day anywhere in Utah because it's part of Aztlan.
Which is?
It's told that the Aztec people originally came from up north.
Oh.
From around here,
which
around,
is true,
in the southwestern
actually, right?
United States. I mean, you know, there's varying arguments.
The Bering Strait, etc.
But then it was something that the Chicano movement adopted to be kind of evince the primordial right that people of Native and Mestizo descent had around manifest destiny.
Is primordial the right word?
Yeah, it could be.
Prehistoric?
I don't know, are you looking at a...
No, I'm just... I don't know what the right nomenclature is. I'll go with your...
Pre-existing route. Is kind
great,
of a
great, there
synonym.
We go. Yeah, okay. I like that word, though. Aztlan? Aztlan?
Aztlan.
That's cool, man.
I think I'm saying it right. Like I said, my Spanish isn't very good.
Well, you're doing a disservice to everyone that's ever had any Ortega products at the grocery store.
I know. Because having it in the grocery store wasn't already a disservice.
Yeah, right. And Monday, September 17th, will you do the honors of announcing the birthday, please?
Yes. Happy birthday, Dean Hillis. Dean is one of our writers. He generally does kind of indie type stuff, and he also does his tastes vary from like old 80s stuff to like modern contemporary indie rock. Happy birthday, Dean.
That's cool. All right, you did a really good job for your first event section with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, I bet.
Did you I say appreciate it?
Appreciate.
I appreciate it. That was pretty all right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pat. I'm good with accents. I just can't speak the languages.
Right, yeah. I can speak gibberish in Eastern European languages.
Really? Impressive. Yeah. Can we save that for a future date, kind of like a teaser?
Sure.
Because we don't want to give people all our beautiful languages in one shot. We're going to save it. Come up with a really good speech in gibberish, though, next time for me. Also, we should tell people where to find more information about the events, I think.
Well, you can go to our daily calendar online or look in any of the magazines. And it's on the front page of slugmag.com or any place cool if you open up a Slugmag.
And also on our app, you can check out the calendar there and ask one of us here that works at Slug. We will know at least one event in the week that's cool.
Yeah.
So we're pretty good resources too. That's an addition. We've never even talked about that before. But if you can find a Slug staff member, we can tell you one thing that's going on in town.
It's this new service we have going on. It's called Existing.
Exactly.
It's
and it's free.
Yeah, it's kind of the more the organic version of apps.
Well, I think this has been really awesome. Can I say that?
Yeah, I would say so.
All right, well, thanks, Alex.
Thank you, JP.
Settle Down is a post-hardcore band from Salt Lake City, comprised of SLC heavyweight musicians including Eric Rose, Jeremy Condor, Alex Johnson, Taylor Orton, and Drew Hudson. The band has been hard at work on their debut 7-inch, a split with Sure Sign of the Nail, set to be released at Slug Localized on September 14th. From that 7-inch split, here's Zombie Powder from Settle Down.
Yeah.
That was Settle Down's Zombie Powder from their upcoming debut self-titled 7-inch split. Settle Down will be playing localized this Friday with Cornered by Zombies and Gunner at the Urban Lounge, located at 241 South 500 East in Salt Lake City. The show starts at 10 p.m. and is just $5. For more information on the group, you can visit them online at reverbnation.com/settledown. The SLC Photo Collective recently celebrated their one-year anniversary in July of 2012. To commemorate the occasion, the collective debuted a brand new exhibition featuring 25 years of photos from the Twilight Concert Series to mark their silver anniversary. Slug photographer John Barkapple sat down with collective founder and fellow Slug photographer Dave Brewer to speak about the anniversary and the exhibition.
So many levels of SLC Photo Collective participation are available to photographers, from full-time artist leases to hourly bring-your-own-gear rentals. Who are your full-time artists right now?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We have a lot of opportunities for people to get involved. Like you mentioned, we do have full and part-time leases available for those photographers that know they need a place to shoot, know they need some office space to set up a computer and be able to meet with clients. But I realize that there's kind of a smaller demographic of those kind of photographers in Salt Lake, and we also wanted to open it up, you know, just on an hourly basis for those that kind of want to rent it from time to time. We have everything available for people to shoot in the studio hourly with equipment included or without equipment included. We have different price options. It's really pretty affordable. And so that was going pretty well for the first few months, where we had those two options, full-time leases and then the hourly rentals. But then I started to realize that there really was kind of a big gap between photographers that really had the need or the means for a full-time lease and those that were shooting hourly. Because a lot of the ones that were shooting hourly, they were more up-and-coming photographers. They didn't have as big of budgets on their shoots, and so they were happy to be using the facilities, but you know, what they were charging for their shoot and what they were having to, you know, invest as far as time and equipment goes, they really weren't able to make as much out of it as I would have hoped for them to. So I kind of decided I wanted to bridge that gap between the hourly rentals and full-time lease artists. And so I came up with what we now call the Studio Punch Pass. And what that is it's basically a way to buy 10 hours in the studio in advance for a huge discounted rate. So basically, and that still include, and the 10 hours is fully adjustable. You can, you know, we can schedule them by phone, by email. They're in half hour increments, so you never waste time. You can come and go as you please. And so it's a really great opportunity for people to, you know, pick a one-time fee. They get this studio punch pass and they can kind of come and go as they please. And we implemented that a few months ago, and just a couple of people are starting to take notice of it and take advantage of it. But those that have are just talking it up, because it's as though they have their own studio. They can, you know, do a lot of shoots here, get a lot of work done, and it's a very, very low cost to them as well. But I think we've been talking a lot about figures and costs. I think aside from that, the important thing is being able to up your level of professionalism. When you have a shoot and you're trying to move your furniture around and set up a backdrop around your TV and your roommates are barging in, and you know, it just really kind of, you can only go so far without having a space to call your own. And so basically we wanted to provide opportunities for people to come in here, have a nice comfortable place to meet with clients, to discuss projects. There's a large screen TV that people can display their work on and, you know, go through and present images. We have all the photo equipment that you could really need for most shoots, you know, everything from large soft boxes to 7-foot octodomes and strip boxes and beauty dishes and all the lenses and lighting gear, backdrops you could really need. So, you know, when you bring a photo shoot into a space like this, and you bring a client or you bring a family or you bring whoever you're photographing, they get to look around the art gallery while they're here and check out the work that's on display, whether it's from a local artist or an international touring exhibit that we've had on display. It's a great space to just bring people together and make
it much more interesting than a living room.
It's much more interesting and much more versatile than a living room.
this punch pass, if I have a punch pass, how does that work when I come down? Is the door locked? Do I have to schedule someone to be down here? What's mm-hmm. the process?
Great. We are open to the public as an art gallery, although shoots, we tend to like to schedule them in advance, whether that be on the phone or by email. If you wanted to schedule a shoot, whether it be hourly or if you had a punch pass and wanted to get some shoots lined up, easiest way is just to give us a call on our landline here at the studio or on my cell phone, and we'll get you set up with whatever date and whatever time you're looking for. And otherwise, we also cater to last minute shoots. I've had people, you know, knock on the door and say, hey, you know, this location just bailed. We didn't get permission to shoot here. Can we, you know, shoot here for a little bit? And I said, absolutely, come on in. So we cater people's needs. You know, we recommend trying to schedule things in advance so that we can keep the schedule and the studio organized, but we also don't mind receiving a phone call late at night or otherwise, you know, in the middle of a hurting situation, because we're pretty much willing to help people out. I'm here on site pretty much 24/7. So
yeah, that'd be fantastic. If you're shooting a band downtown, you're hoping on the exteriors and then it's raining,
mm-hmm.
you've got a punch pass, run down to the collective. Everybody's there, you know, you still get your shoot done.
It's either everybody's there or you've got the whole studio to yourself. We keep it pretty, you know, we're really easy to accommodate. If people want a private studio closed set, we lock the doors, give you your space. And if people want my help or the help of an assistant or an intern here in the studio setting up lights or cleaning up, we can usually give you that as well.
Okay, and you mentioned classes that you had seen. Was it in LA, makeup classes and stuff like that?
We've been actually hosting a lot of different, working with a lot of different local salons and a lot of different photographers, hair and makeup artists here locally, and putting together some really pretty impressive workshops, whether it be photography workshops, Photoshop, or also kind of tying it all together with hair and makeup, where we'll shoot photos of models for portfolios with elaborate hair and makeup, and editorial hairpiece building workshops that we've hosted from various salons, and working with Lunatic Fringe and SJ Creatives, and working with a lot of different people that are, you know, utilizing the space and trying to bring people together on their own accord.
Okay, so makeup artists and stylists, how do they interact with the Photo Collective? Is there a way to build up a network of photography clients you could work with as a hairstylist?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's, I think, one of the greatest benefits to the Photo Collective is the networking that comes along with it. Everyone that I've talked to that has been around, whether they're photographers or, you know, they've been their makeup artists or hairstylists that have been here for a shoot, or whether they're just getting into photography, I've heard people say that just hanging out here and coming down to events or just being around when we have different things going on, they've met some of the nicest people, some of the most creative people, and a lot of people are starting to collaborate together. I think the networking is the biggest perk to being around and being a part of the Photo Collective. As far as hair and makeup artists go, I actually have quite a few makeup artists that prefer using our space to prep their models for on-location shoots or prep their brides for a bridal shoot on location. I'll have a couple of makeup artists that call me every once in a while and say, hey, you know, can I come rent the hair and makeup counter section, the wardrobe changing room, the client lounge? I want to meet with a client. And instead of meeting their clients in their apartment or at their house, they can definitely come down and get set up here, and it's really great.
That could be a punch pass as well?
That could be a punch pass as well, yeah.
Marvelous. So the punch pass just isn't available to photographers?
No, the punch pass is primarily, it was created with photographers in mind. But we also cater towards other creative visual artists, videographers, filmmakers, as well as hair and makeup artists. We have a lot of makeup artists that love using our large vanity counter and lights, and it's just a great space to prepare models for on-location shoots as well. So we have photographers and models that primarily use the punch pass just as a meeting place, just to meet up with clients, just to as a central backup plan, and it's here if they need it. It's a great opportunity. It's a great deal more than anything. The people that have taken advantage of it are like, wow, you know, I shot here for one day and paid for my punch pass, and now I've got another 8 hours to kill to do whatever I want. So I love hearing stories like that from people that really take advantage of what we're trying to do, because those that do will definitely see the difference in their work.
T, tell me more about the Twilight anniversary and your 1 year anniversary in that party and the show that you've got on display right now.
I've fortunately had the opportunity to photograph the Twilight concert series over the last 5 years, and I've seen the progression, and I've seen all the various bands that have come through, and I've loved having the opportunity to shoot some of my favorite bands. It's been an opportunity to shoot, you know, Modest Mouse, M Ward, Sonic Youth, and a lot of the bands that have come through the last 5 years. And so a few months ago, I kind of just started making a few prints from some of my favorite bands. And just to have prints, it's sad to have your photos grow up to be JPEGs. So I wanted
how large are the prints?
The first few prints that I was making, I was running them about 16 by 24. So okay, not huge prints by any means, but you know, big enough to put on the wall. A few months ago, I kind of just started thinking, you know, we were coming up on our 1 year anniversary, and I knew that the Twilight concert series was celebrating their 25th anniversary. So I kind of started getting the gears turning, and I decided to put a proposal together and send it over to Casey Jarman, who is the founder of the Twilight Concert Series and works at the Salt Lake City Arts Council, and basically pitched them the idea to kind of join forces and collaborate on this project, celebrating our 1 year anniversary and also kind of commemorating and celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Photo Collective. And basically told him, hey, listen, I've got a lot of these prints from the last 5 years, but I'd also like to take it a step further, and I wanted to scan in negatives and slides from the last 25 years and basically showcase not only the progression of the bands that have come through and the progression of the concert series as a whole, but inadvertently we showcased the progression of photography and also the evolution of technology, because a lot of these scans were very low resolution. You know, they weren't the greatest original slides that we could go off of, but we pulled from, it was fun. I went up to the Salt Lake City Art Council office and we went through a bunch of different slides and negatives from the last 25 years and picked and pulled our favorites, and had my friend Ian Madison help us out with the scanning end of things, who loves shooting film and scanning. And then basically we put a show together that consists of about 300 images from the last 25 years. So we have about 40 prints that were from from 1980s and 90s. And then from about 2000 is when we made the switch to digital. And we've got large scale prints, everything that you, pretty much covering every band that has come through over the last the last 5 years, definitely, and the last maybe about the last 10, we tried to include everyone. And it was a really great opportunity to collaborate with the Twilight Concert Series. Having worked with them quite a bit over the last few years, it was awesome to be able to collectively see our efforts together, be able to see all these photos under one roof from various photographers over the last few years, and had some of the staff from the concert series come down to the show, and they were just blown away by seeing, you know, this is awesome. So we decided to collaborate with the Twilight Concert Series, and after we started getting a lot of the prints up on the walls, I realized that we still had quite a bit of wall space because we have a large 3,500 square foot studio here. And so I thought I wanted to kind of create a concert-esque environment, and that came by way of the images that are on the walls, as well as the lighting. I got a hold of a DJ friend of mine that had a bunch of colored lights and a bunch of lasers, and we just kind of wanted to go all out and celebrate. And I also realized we had a lot of extra wall space when we were coming up on the show, so I pitched the idea to the Twilight Concert Series to include their custom fur turtle posters that are designed by Travis Bone. He has been
enthusiastically working?
Yeah, Travis Bone from Fur Total Prints has been enthusiastically working on these custom posters showcasing every single band that has toured through the Twilight Concert Series in the last 4 or 5 years. So I wanted to get his work on display as well, because I think they're really great, and it just added to the ambiance, added to the space, and I think it was really well received.
I remember buying one, a She and Him poster, and he was selling them off on the side during the show, and it was fun to walk over there and grab, you know, a souvenir, but it was top quality, really great stuff.
The Twilight Concert Series exhibition runs until Saturday, September 15th, and is free for the public to check out. For more information on the collective, visit them online at slcphotocollective.org. Thanks for listening to another edition of Sound Waves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Do you have any of your favorite food trucks in town? Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp will be in soon to talk about food trucks, and we'd like to hear what you enjoy out and about in the city, late night, during the day, whatever. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message letting us know what you like about food trucks. 858-233-9324 is the number to reach us at. We may just play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine, and it's produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and JP. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and is recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design is by T-Done, with technical design by Kate O'Connor. On next week's show, the burlesque troupe Salt City Sirens, the aforementioned Yelp, and five-state killing spree.